Howdy, and welcome to the 3-2 Outcomes podcast presented by Baseball Prospectus. I'm your host, Ian Lefkowitz, and joining me, as always, from Suburban Michigan, Ben Murphy. Ben, how are you?
I'm cold, Ian. The polar vortex is here, and it's legit.
That's very funny. I'm flying to Florida tomorrow.
Have a great
enjoy.
Trip. Have a great trip.
Yeah, enjoy the negative 14. Say hello to the Icicles, Penguin, Mr. Freeze, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know what who
nice
is there.
To see you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice to see you as well. And joining us, as always, from our nation's capital, Jared West. Jared, how are you?
I'm cold as well. They let us out of work early because it was cold and snowy or something. I don't know.
Yeah, so hard times in the Northeast. I guess since we since we last took a hiatus, the polar caps have melted. Earth is ending. So,
but somehow it's conversation. Anyway.
Yeah, our introductory conversations are a little different.
This is what happens when we take off a week.
Yeah, a little bit of a mistake. We are obviously being punished for our sins, and now you are being punished for our sins because we are back on the air. welcome to Controversy Week. Here on the 3-2 Outcomes podcast, several of which we did not start.
That's a surprise.
Which is very exciting. But we'll be talking about a few trending topics on the Scoresheet Talk forums, which were unusually lively. If you are not familiar with the Scoresheet Talk forums, you can Google them. It's a Yahoo group.
Still not old.
Still not old. But before we do that, I want to turn it over to the mailbag captain to make a an announcement. Mailbag captain?
Yeah. So send us your emails, scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. We won't respond to them or get through them on air, but we like getting them, so that's nice. For those who have emailed, sorry, we'll get back to you soon, and maybe we'll even get to some responses in the near future.
Yeah, I think we'd like to have either a mailbag show or a majority mailbag-ish show. Right now, we're unlikely to be taking emails this week, and we are unlikely to be taking emails next week because we may have a special guest, which is exciting. But a couple weeks from now, hopefully we'll be getting some emails coming in, and obviously we'd love to hear from you, and whether on the air or off the air, we'll be responding to you.
Scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com.
We run like a well-oiled machine. It's hard to imagine how we ended up off the air for so long, right? They were like, do you need to go to radio school for this? No, it's podcast. It's 2019.
Radio we were school?
Too what good. We need to let the other podcast catch up to us.
Oh my God. Is there really radio such school. A thing as radio school?
Yeah, it's like broadcasting school.
Yeah. Yeah.
What you just sit you know, there and talk.
For the olds.
Well, we just sit there and talk. Other people actually have like production values,
standards, practices. It's okay. I just hope you're all listening to this on like at 1.5 speed minimum.
Yeah, oh, minimum. Go for two. Two is worth it.
I listen to my podcasts on two, and everybody that hears it is like, "How can you understand what they're saying?" I'm like, "It's not."
Oh, you can understand. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't want to listen to me on slower than 1.5.
IRL, I just like speed this up.
Yeah. You know how they have like augmented reality where you combine like VR tech with your phone and you get to see like you know Pokemon or whatever. You need that with audio. We can just speed up the conversations you have with people 1.5 speed.
I love it.
I use 1.3 speed. So like a gentle hum. Everything's fine, except sometimes I listen to podcast theme songs on regular speed.
Yeah.
And they sound bizarre.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah. So I listen to podcasts of TV shows sometimes. And then like every once in a while I'll catch the actual TV show and it's like a total mindfuck. It's really bad.
So, you know, listen however you want. It's a pleasure to us that you're listening at all. We have three major topics that we'll get to, and probably some digressions, each as profound and valuable as that one. But all of them came from the Score Sheet Talk Forum. Since we were last on the air, the Score Sheet list was released, which is, I think, always the most controversial part of any Score Sheet year.
It's my favorite holiday.
Yeah. It's a really fascinating holiday, because what happens is the Bartons who run the system put in like a lot of work and over the off season to like collect information and you know, style everything and get everything ready for the next year. They send a couple like drafts for us to look at, and then they publish, and idiots like me just like pick it apart almost immediately. So it can't be fun for them, but then again, you know, that's why the money flows in that direction rather than the other way around. So, that being said, I think what we've seen is there, what we saw are a couple of really interesting comments from the Score Sheet Talk Forum, and I think we want to get into them in some, greater detail. And, really, I think, investigate them. A lot of it is ground that we've covered because, you know, everything is the same over and over again. But now, in the age of StatCast, in the age of kind of bigger data, it's interesting, and, you know, major changes in the game. It's kind of interesting to think about in this new context. I'll introduce them and throw them to you. The first kerfuffle that came up early in the draft process, and I want to credit Max Fawcett for sharing it. He highlighted the fact that Manny Machado, who has been a third baseman for all of Jared's adult life for your Baltimore Orioles, does not have a third base rating. He is rated as a shortstop. And below average shortstop, I believe, right? I should have his number on hand, and I don't, which is why we are paid the no bucks.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, but he does not have a third base rating. And as we all know, Manny Machado has been in the past, at least, a fairly exceptional shortstop, up near the best of the game. So the implication is, as a shortstop who doesn't have third base eligibility, he is going to be an absolute anchor if played at third base. So there was some back and forth, and Max made the point, and this is the part I'm going to quote in its entirety, is responding, "The whole point of Score Sheet, indeed its entire value proposition, is that it more closely mirrors the reality of Major League Baseball and gives owners the ability to make choices that match those that GMs managers have. Not being able to play Manny Machado at third base with a range that befits his actual skills is an affront to that." Which, you know, I think is a strong statement, but I think there's some validity there. And I want to throw it to you guys now. Do either of you have a thought as to whether that rings true to you or not?
Do you think it's worth presenting the other counter perspective here? Yeah. Or at least, like, to represent it.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a few counterpoints. One which I thought was well-written was from Dan Wachtel, who said, "This strikes me as totally wrong. If and when he gets 10 games at third base, then he should get a third base rating commensurate with everybody's understanding of his ability there." Which I think is sort of the rules are the rules, and he's not currently eligible to play. Yeah. And everyone knew that coming in.
Yeah. So I think Max is definitely right in the foundations of what he's describing. The problem is that the core implementation isn't set up to be realistic in this particular aspect, right? The whole paradigm around fielding, range, and positional eligibility is I can't think of a word that wouldn't get us a bad, what is the not safe for work rating for the podcast. You know, it's kind of anachronistic. It's derivative from the roto leagues, right? It's like the idea that your eligibility to play at a certain position is based on how many games you've played there this season or last season. And obviously that's not realistic. Ian, I think you could probably rant about this for at least an hour on mic, having heard you do so for many hours off air. And without getting into that too much, I think that general premise has to be acknowledged before you can really get into the crux of the rest of the argument about any specific rating, because it's so key to why we end up with this sort of bass-ackwards situation where everybody knows that the ratings that come with Manny Machado's positional eligibility are not going to be realistic at all, right? It's like, well, the whole system is not really realistic at all, you know?
Right. So I think there are two questions here, which is, one, you know, what can be done about the system? And two, is Manny Machado worth the exception as somebody who is tremendously valuable?
See,
go ahead.
I would actually put a third thing on there. And this is also, I think, directly derivative of the choice to do the player ID lists the way that they do. But I think it's just as big a deal that his like league eligibility was kept in limbo and then was sort of arbitrarily decided based on a clamoring for some clarity by owners, I think, you know, like the people that play Score Sheet, because he's still unsigned and he used to play in the NL at the end of last season. Score Sheet said, well, we're just going to stick him in the NL list for now. But the whole practice of sort of keeping them in one league or the other based on, you know, contractual expectations and then having, you know, what the team says they're going to use the player for matter more than what the player's actually done in the past, just seems like it's all part and parcel of the rest of the issue, right? It's like...
I think, right, the thing that compounds this issue is, again, one of the big changes of the game. You know, this macro issue of Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, and literally dozens of free agents sitting out well past when, you know, these lists were created in mid-January. I think they were created with the expectation that every major free agent or most major free agents would sign. A couple of them would be placed in leagues. And then, you know, there would be scrubs who would kind of fall into the list whenever whenever they landed on a team. But, you know, we are now in a situation over the past 2 years where this paradigm has broken. And it does relate to this Manny Machado exception. Jared, as, you know, Manny Machado's number one fan... how many Manny Machado bobbleheads do you have, by the way?
Oh, that's a good question. I think only two, but I'm not positive. I'd have to check.
That feels low.
Yeah, no, I'm looking around, but I think some of them are in their room. I think it's two.
Okay. But so, you know, I'm curious about your take on this as well. And, you know, just to add some clarity, Manny Machado played shortstop for the Baltimore Orioles. You may be aware. Sure. You may be aware. Played shortstop moderately badly in the.
I don't know if I'd say that.
Lack of caring about results sense. Was traded to the Dodgers immediately.
Well, to be fair, Joe Sheehan is making the argument today that you have to put some. You could put some of that on the Orioles pitchers and their inability to throw pitches that batters can't cream the heck out of. So it's a little harder to play shortstop.
That's certainly fair. Right. A combination of poor pitching, poor hitting, and poor fielding. But they have spirit.
The Orioles way.
But, you know, he moved to the Dodgers kind of immediately, was like repositioned, and 30 seconds later was like right back to being Manny Machado. And with the Dodgers, he did get in 16 games at third base last year. So it's not as though, you know, he's off the position forever. So I'm wondering, do you feel like Manny Machado deserves an exception, kind of being in limbo for so long and not really knowing where he's going to end up, on what team and in what part of the lineup?
Well, and for the record, I have mixed feelings about Manny Machado, as do most Orioles fans I've talked with. But I don't know. So I'm a rules guy. I like rules. And exceptions bug me a little. I realize there's some special circumstances here, but I don't like exceptions, and I don't like them being decided this late in the game. To me, that's another problem to not have a ruling until now. Yeah, not that there's necessarily a great time for it, but any sort of, and this is a pretty significant thing to me, it should be decided and clear well before this point in time. It's too late now to be
it's
talking
not like
about
we couldn't have anticipated that this situation would arise either, right? Like,
sure,
yeah,
I mean, the rules are perfect. I'm not saying that there's not going to be any edge cases or whatever, but yeah, I think this is something that could have been foreseen, certainly.
Yeah, so it's this interesting dilemma, and I think I kind of land where you guys do, which is essentially I think there are bigger fundamental problems with Major League Baseball. There are a few fundamental problems with the way score sheet is calculating range. I would not make an exception for Manny Machado or carve that out this year. I think precisely because he is so valuable.
Yeah. But I mean, to what we were talking about and what Max was saying, it highlights some of the ways that score sheet is increasingly diverging from Major League Baseball, right? Like, no one thinks that Manny Machado has a job at third base right now. No one could possibly think that.
Right.
And the fact that that's where it's going to be in score sheet, you know, said something about score sheet's reflection of reality.
Right, where I think it was pointed out elsewhere in the comments that Manny Machado is going to end up with a lower range rating than Miguel Andujar, who cannot field the position.
How much of this?
Go ahead.
No, so I was going to sort of pivot slightly. I was thinking about, like, let's say we were called by the Bartons and they said, you know, give us your like one or two best ideas for how we can remediate this situation, you know, given what we've said about Machado specifically, but I think also sort of, you know, there's undercurrents of the fundamental issue. And then there's also, I think, a whole bunch of other sort of superficial comments, which you kind of get to with the Andujar reference, that like the range ratings every year puzzle people. So one of the things that they might do is give a little bit more transparency about how the range ratings are calculated, mm-hmm. or, you know, talk a little bit more about at least like which factors are considered, or, you know, how much history is used and in what relative weight. You know, they might also let the people that play score sheet, you know, have some kind of direct influence on the range ratings to say, you know, put these fielders in, you know, order based on your experience watching them play, or, you know, give your, you know, best estimate for the three best fielders at the position. However they wanted to do the survey, they could have some kind of survey that let, you know, basically mm-hmm. wisdom of crowds sort of help influence the range ratings. Do you guys think that doing something like that would help alleviate some of the pressure that's being applied to the Bartons in this situation? Because I think, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, they're still running a business. And, you know, they sort of say in the comments in the score sheet talk threads, like, well, you know, this is a game and we're trying to keep that in mind. But they're also on a forum where a bunch of owners are frustrated with the product that they're putting out for various reasons. And, you know, I think it's something that they need to consider in terms of PR or how they respond, that it's not always a great idea just to say to a bunch of customers that are clamoring for something different, like, hey, yeah, we hear you, but no. You know, some kind of concession or compromise might really help them. And I don't think it's realistic to say, well, you should just overhaul how the fielding system works, because we know from past experience that that's not likely to happen or go well if they try to implement it. So what do you guys think are some of the things that they could do that might alleviate some of the tension or the pressure and are also realistic to get done, not by the start of, you know, this major league season, but maybe by the start of next?
Well, just to answer your immediate question, I don't think that solves the problem here with Machado doing something like that. I think there's stuff that could be done, but I don't think that would resolve this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think you bring up a couple of good points. One is, you know, I certainly recognize that they are in an impossible position where, you know, they have to define an ill-defined thing in a universal way that will make people mad inherently. Yeah. And there is no defensive leaderboard that you can point to in the same way there is for offense. So there will always be some measure of subjectivity. However, I think one of the big changes in this conversation that we've had between the last time we had this conversation on air and now is the implementation of StatCast, and in particular StatCast range ratings and outs above average. You know, they've now had defensive range ratings for about a year and a half, I think. It might actually be two seasons. I think, from what I understand, we're a couple weeks away from the implementation of infield range ratings. I think, and I'm not just saying this because it confirms some of the things that I've complained about in the past, although it does, I think having that objective measure of range kind of may help as a pressure valve. I don't know that it would be accepted by the community. I suspect it would not.
I'm with you. Yeah, I think there'd be some opposition.
But at least then they have a way to say, like, look, this wasn't some random arbitrary number that we pulled, right? This is something that's based in some kind of objective science or fact.
Right. And the range rating, I think, was birthed from Bill James' range factor, which is, you know, turned out to, I think, be a flawed stat. I think so flawed that it's kind of almost worse than guesstimating in certain ways. You can, I think you can make adjustments to range factor to make it more useful, but it's kind of fall within the statistical community has left us a little unmoored. And I think, you know, we are moving towards a replacement, and I actually would advocate eventually to look long and hard at, especially with outfield ranges. You know, I think that's something that that's worth pursuing and talking about. And I think I want to talk a little bit more about how StatCast will affect things in the future. Maybe in a future podcast. I don't want to go too far down that road now. But, you know, I think there are a bunch of promising ways to solve some of this issue. It will not solve eligibility, however. And related to that, the second controversy in the last couple of weeks on Scoresheet, I think a good controversy from a user on Scoresheet Talk named JTP. I apologize, I do not have your full name, but you wrote a really interesting article that we are going to steal and use as basically the basis of our entire podcast. So
and just to cut in, I didn't think about it. If you happen to be listening or someone who knows this person is, we are happy to have you on and talk about it.
Yeah.
We probably should have emailed ahead of time. That would have been better.
Production value at work.
we'll fire our booker.
For the record, I'm the mailbag captain, so I can't do anything until the person emails me first. Otherwise, it's not my job. It's someone else's responsibility.
Yeah, but thank you. And, you know, it, certainly thought-provoking, and I think we'd certainly love to discuss this in more detail. Everyone can find this, again, if you go to Scoresheet Talk, you can Google it. It's a Yahoo group. It's the subject line is the Scoresheet 2020 Project, Suggestions for Improving Realism Next Season. It's a very thoroughly detailed email, and I'm apologize because I'm going to paraphrase a lot of it for the purpose of the conversation. But the thrust of it is that there are 13 proposals, and I did want to go through most of them, or all of them, in at least some detail. And the first one, the author presumes that Major League Baseball is moving away from positions on both sides of the ball, with smaller benches pushing teams to prioritize flexibility at their lineups and bench. And this is making a minimum preseason qualification of 20 games a relic, and that owners should be able to play someone anywhere he's recently shown he can respectably play the position. So his he says he'd support even lower minimums, but baby steps here seem fine. The first proposal is lower the threshold for position qualification to 10 games in previous seasons, 5 games in season. What do you guys feel about that?
And Ben, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit for these. I should have said something ahead of time. Not that we know how the sim is coded. We don't. But among the three of us, you probably have the most insight into what it would take to make some of these changes. Mm-hmm. So for the stuff we talk about, I think if you could maybe speak a little to, just relatively speaking, oh, this is going to be a relatively simple fix, or some of them I'm going to guess as we go on, I'd be like, yeah, it'd be good, but this is probably relatively time intensive.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I'll just be guessing, but I'm happy to guess.
Yeah, it's an educated guess.
I mean, we'll have to go through all of them, but I'm guessing that this would be one of the easiest things to implement. I think from like a Scoresheet owner perspective, I generally support it. It feels a little bit like a Band-Aid on a compound fracture, but that's like one of the ones where the bone's sticking out and it's like bleeding everywhere.
Not necessary.
Well, I didn't know what if everybody knows what a compound fracture is. I don't know.
I mean to describe it in such detail.
Oh, that wasn't detail. Okay, anyway. listen, I'm going to go on a very short tangent, Jared. Marry a doctor, you get like numb to the way that doctors talk about things. And so this is probably my fault for forgetting what a normal person is comfortable with. But like after you talk about rotting flesh at the dinner table, everything else sort of gets bumped down a few notches. Anyway, easy to do. I'd support it. Doesn't really feel like it's going to make a meaningful impact. I'd be interested and wish that, especially for some of these where it could have been quantified, it'd be interesting to quantify how differently the positional eligibility would look if the proposal were adopted.
That is work we could have also done. That's a really good point.
Or like, you know, he could have done, but yes. Yeah. He or she. Sorry, I'm assuming gender of this author.
I apologize. Jared, any thoughts as well?
Yeah, no, I generally what Ben said, I tend to agree. I think back to your question of defense, I think there might be some cascading effects in terms of defensive ratings and that sort of thing. It also, I mean, I think changes score sheet a little bit.
But oh, are these the Polkos? This might be Justin Tim Polko.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yeah. They speak in the plural first person in some of this. Sorry, I shouldn't have interrupted, but
yeah.
Anyway,
that's a really good insight. Good work. And if not, I apologize to everyone involved and blame Ben.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm comfortable with that.
Okay, none.
Okay,
proceed.
Yeah, no, that's.
You think there might be some unintended consequences, basically?
Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be unintended consequences. I don't know if I'm super worried about these, but I think there are some, and I think some significant in terms of, I think making more people eligible is something that we have generally wanted, but I think it does change the game of score sheet a little bit for people.
So are we going to go through? We'll go through all these, but I think it would be fun to vote like yay or nay amongst the three of us and see if we would pass these proposals or not.
Yeah,
I'm guessing most of them will pass. Cause
yeah, for me, this one is a easy yay as well.
Yeah.
Although, you know, certainly very smart people on the Scorsese Talk forum. You know, John Armain comes to mind, but certainly there are others who support really stringent qualifications. I just don't think it represents real baseball, and I don't think it represents the way baseball is headed. I think there are unintended consequences to this, certainly. But, you know, one of the things to think about is with this pressure of benches disappearing, it is not the same game that it was 10 years ago. It's not the same game that it was 20 years ago. You don't necessarily have that platoon bat. You don't necessarily have the backup infielder that you do. And really, you know, every team is moving to this kind of Marwin Gonzalez model, and Scorsese does not handle Marwin Gonzalez very well at all.
Yeah. I'm a qualified yay. I think the problem is just the defensive rating. I can envision some scenarios where some people get a defensive rating they probably shouldn't have because of how the defensive ratings work, and play five games at a position and all of a sudden become super incredibly valuable in a way that maybe doesn't reflect reality.
Right.
Either.
Right. So I think without having more of a spread of defensive rangeability, you know, there will be some consequences. I still think overall it's the right decision. Jared, would you say yay or nay?
Yeah.
You're qualified yay?
Yeah. Qualified yay.
And Ben?
Yeah, I'd probably go for it.
Three yays. Let's do it in 2020. proposal two. And a lot of these relate to the opener. Again, I think we want to have a future baseball podcast at some point. So this is considered this kind of a sneak preview. There, you know, different ways to deal with the opener, with the way that affects the pitcher and short reliever ratings. So with bullpenning existing, the author proposes that we eliminate the requirement that pitchers start, that only pitchers can start games. Ben, how do you feel about this?
I actually have more concerns about unintended consequences with this one than the last one. I feel like I would need to have more data about how often it's really happening in MLB and whether we think that that prevalence really warrants a sea change in like the full rule set. I would need to have some kind of objective information to evaluate this before I could feel comfortable voting.
And do you think this would be doable?
In terms of difficulty, it strikes me that depending on how it's coded, this one could be much tougher.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know for sure how everything's set up, but certainly this one is much more difficult than the first one was.
I
guess it would be good to know, you know, that I think, you know, Dave made an update to the code so that Shohei Ohtani could play both ways. It'd be interesting to hear, maybe he said, I missed it, how much time that took.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Like I kind of agree with you. I think maybe the way I could see it operationalized is just either treat SRs as Ps or like duplicate them, but it really depends on how the back end of the system looks. Jared, how do you feel about this one?
Yeah, I'm close to Ben again. I think I'm worried about the unintended consequences. This also sparks a little bit of, I think, a philosophical debate of how much should score sheet reflect reality, but also how much should individual managers have the opportunity to play their team how they wish it were played, you know?
Right.
And that deviates from reality in some sense as well too. So I'm a little nervous at that. And I'm a little nervous about the unintended consequences of just the sim itself. If you start letting pitchers do this, I don't know. I would want to have some confidence that the sim can handle it, because I could see it being a big enough jolt to the system that some weird stuff happens.
Right. So my position is similar to yours. I think I definitely support this in theory. Would like to see the sim get there, because, again, I think this is the way that baseball is going. But it's very tough to do without other concurrent changes. You know, in Major League Baseball, there are 12 or 13 man rosters. You know, I think in score sheet, starting pitchers sometimes can go 9-10 innings. There are no pitch counts. I think there are other ways in which the starting pitcher does not mirror reality, that it does feel vulnerable to fraud in its current state.
Yeah.
Okay, so just in the interest of time, Ben, yay or nay?
I'd say no for now, or abstain if possible.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, same.
Three no's. Proposal three. Restore the ability of short relievers to enter the game in any inning. Ben?
This strikes me as probably moderately easy to implement, and I think I would be in favor. I don't really know why a score sheet owner should be obligated to have their starter stay in the game if they're beyond the hook. One of the things that I would love to see in my like ideal sim, which of course we'll talk about at some point down the road, is more interactivity in bullpen management. I think like the hook is a decent proxy, but it seems like the more constraints you put on bullpen management, the less realistic your game gets. And if there's some reason that a manager wants to take a pitcher out, they should be allowed to do that and have to worry about what the potential consequences might be. So, I think I would support this, and I would imagine it's not going to be too difficult to implement.
Jared?
I think, keeping in mind, we don't want to just make the thing we just voted down happen, but yeah, I think I'm cool with this.
I'm actually a little less sanguine, just because I think with starting pitching in its current state, I think this could be vulnerable to fraud. But yeah. I'm definitely closer to yes on this one. So Ben, you're a yes?
Yeah, I think so. I have a question about what you just said, though. Do you think that if a score sheet roster was constructed such that the owner had enough innings to just throw bullpen games all week, would you allow that in principle?
Right. I think not, because I don't think it's the way that baseball is played. I don't think baseball should be played with 20-man bullpens, which you can do in score sheet.
There's a difference between, like, that's not how baseball is played and that's not how you think it should be played. Right? Like, right now, no MLB team is creating a roster that is all, like, bullpen arms. But theoretically, there are enough bullpen arms out there that if you had enough of them, you could do this. And it wouldn't represent, like, a fundamental difference from what's already happening.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm trying to rush through this a little quick, but just to complete the thought. For me, because real-life teams have a roster constraint of 25 players, and which means that they have a constraint of 12, 13, probably 14 pitchers, God almighty. I think they have to deal with bulk innings in a way that score sheet teams do not feel the pressure to do to handle. Okay. And therefore, you have to kind of add those constraints a little artificially right now.
Okay. It seems like it might be better just to have like a 25-person active roster every week or something like that. But
yeah, it's not a score sheet 2020.
Point taken. Yeah, sorry. Fair enough.
Yeah. So, Jared, you're a yay as well?
I'm a yay with, you need some sort of subclause to help mitigate fraud a little bit. If you could add that in as well, sure. I'm a yay.
Yeah, and I'm an A, but nice proposal. Proposal four, allow flexible starting rotations of anywhere from 0 to 7 starters. They choose 0, some can treat as a bullpen game, just like the Brewers throughout most of the playoffs. Very similar. Ben, thoughts?
I'm trying to decide how difficult I think this would be to implement.
Yeah,
it seems like this one might be pretty tough, because I think there's a lot of the way that pitching is set up in score sheet is predicated on 5-person rotation and, like, you know, all of the, you know, corollaries that follow from it. I'd say the effort's like moderate to high, I guess. I think I would prefer a little bit narrower range of what the starting rotation would be. Like, I don't know. Maybe not. I think it's probably fine. I would much rather see pitcher effectiveness be like this thing where you're looking at a player and their fatigue, and if you think of like expected run average or allowed run average on the vertical axis and like pitches thrown on the horizontal axis, you know, it's basically like this thing that starts kind of flat and then just kind of grows, you know, exponentially. If it could be implemented something like that, then it would resolve all these issues, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about this in a future podcast for sure. But
stop going off track, sorry.
But I really love the idea of a fatigue modeler.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a missing piece here. Yeah. Jared, any quick thoughts on proposal 4?
Just maybe it's because how it was framed, but when you say just like the Brewers throughout most of the playoffs, I don't really want a regular season that's like the Brewers throughout most of the playoffs. I think playoff baseball is different than regular season baseball, and I don't want to introduce playoff baseball into regular season baseball.
What a traditionalist.
But if you allow flexible starting rotations of anywhere from 0 to 7 starters, you may be able to model the Oriole pitching rotation.
I dare Scorsese to model the Orioles pitching rotation.
It seems to me like 2, 3, and 4 all go hand in hand. Like you couldn't really do part of them.
Yeah. They are pretty similar. Yeah.
And for me, I really do like this idea, but without additional constraints. Also, I'm a no.
Yeah.
And Ben, I guess you are a no on implementation grounds.
I don't know.
Okay. So that's an abstain.
Yeah.
Jared?
I'm a no.
Okay, so 2 no. So proposal 4 out of the 2020, but maybe 2021. I do like it. I think it's really creative. Proposal 5, give teams the option to list all starting pitchers in the bullpen if desired. If teams want to keep most of their starters SP only and potentially bank starts, that seems fine too. I guess this is hand in hand, so
yeah.
We can go through this pretty quickly. So I think that's, again, a no for all three of us, right?
Yeah, same reasons, I think.
Ben, do you think this is implementable?
Yeah. I would again say moderate to moderately high. There's so much baked into the assumptions about positions within pitchers that I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a question of, I think, for me, whether the like playoff roster lineups card is extensible, and I don't know if it is.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to proposal 6, which is kind of a different category and I think was very intriguing to me. Why should people who track bank starts on their own receive an advantage over owners with less time for that level of detail? Proposal 6, list each team's available bank starts somewhere on one of the league pages. Ben, what do you think? Do you think that's doable?
I think it might not appear exactly the way that the proposal envisions, but it seems like there has to be something behind the scenes that's tracking that kind of information that you could surface to the league page. I don't think I would support it, though. I feel like it's okay for some owners to have a competitive advantage if they're willing to invest the time and energy or have the knowledge and skill to do something extra, and I think this strikes me as something that fits that. I think the problem is with the banked starts, not with the fact that owners that invest more time get an advantage from doing so.
Okay. Jared?
I'll disagree a little with Ben. I'm in favor of this one. I mean, maybe because I'm not good at it, but I tend to prefer less the concept of trying to game the sim and prefer to have it more like what's going on in the baseball world. I can appreciate that if someone puts more time into it, they should have an benefit or an advantage. I get that, but for me personally, it's less fun for me. So I would vote yes for this.
Yay for me as well, because I never remember this stuff. I should. And it would just make my life easier. I think it's one of the things that's hard, like probably deceptively hard to do. And it's why, you know, I created some of the last kerfuffle that we'll get to. But, you know, I would want to know, I think, as an owner. And I think I would be okay with everybody else knowing as well. Proposal 7 and 8, the Billy Hamilton rule, or the Tony La Russa rule, I guess. So
let's never name anything after Tony La Russa, please.
Oh, well. All right. Somewhere Rick Honeycutt is crying.
It's fine. I'm okay with it.
So over time, more and more NL teams are playing the pitcher or putting the pitcher in the eighth slot a lot of the time. The argument here is that Billy Hamilton is a intriguing number nine hitter, but can't slot them there in NL leagues, even though the Reds started him there 106 times last year. Okay, first of all, do not keep Billy Hamilton. I'm sorry. you have 13 better players than Billy Hamilton. I know he's going to play every day for the Royals. I know he's going to get a really good defensive rating. Please, please, no crossover. No, think of, this is like the Allen Iverson rule. No crossover for Billy Hamilton. Anyway, sorry. Do not keep him in that league. But for that matter, NL teams prioritize catcher defense, and incorporating pitch framing is tough, so give catchers something to do. So proposals number 7, let NL teams slot their pitcher in any lineup slot and give teams the options to let pitchers hit away with a bunt of dash, the Michael Lorenzen rule, I guess, because Shohei Ohtani is a little too famous. Ben, how do you think this is feasible? Would you support it?
Seems like it has to be not too difficult. Probably less effort than some of the like pitcher role changes that we talked about before in terms of how pitchers actually pitch. I would say like moderate to slightly below moderate in terms of effort. Certainly not as easy as like changing the positional qualification threshold. And I think I'm pretty much completely in favor. I don't really see much downside to this. I guess technically if like a team were trying to tank, you could exacerbate the ability of like the lineup to be terrible, but there are so many other ways to do that that this is not worth worrying about for that reason.
Yeah. We've discovered most of them all. Jared, how about you?
Yeah, I'm in favor. I mean, this seems like a lower priority thing if I had to rank them, but I don't know if I care too much, but yeah, I'm in favor.
2 years, 3 years, I see no upside to it, but there are people who like dithering with their lineups, so
yeah, I mean, dither away. Isn't that the point of realism, is to dither with your lineup?
Absolutely, yeah. And, like, optimal gets you around a year, fine. If it's at all easy to do, I think it would make things more realistic and more fun. Proposal 8. Change steal YN to latest inning to steal, much like latest inning to bunt. So this is a very funny proposal. Teams could let Billy Hamilton, Terrence Gore, Adam Butcher, Mondesi, Whit Merrifield, basically any Royal, run wild late in games and down by a lot.
Would this not be earliest inning to steal?
Probably.
You'd
want to steal. Like, yeah.
Wouldn't she be more likely to steal late in games with people that don't normally steal because the like one run play is more valuable? Or do I have it backwards?
Hey.
It's not worth worrying about. I generally support it. I think like that sort of flexibility gets at what I was talking about before in terms of manager flexibility. I mentioned it with respect to bullpens before, but like bunting and stealing and stuff like that seems like the game will only be more fun if you let managers do it exactly when they want to. In terms of implementing it, it's probably doable. You know, I think Jared made a decent point indirectly a second ago, and it's like we probably should be thinking about these in terms of like priority order, not necessarily in like magnitude of implementation. And I'm not sure it would rank super high for me, but I think if they wanted to do it, it couldn't be too tough.
Jared, thoughts?
I'm gonna care about steals once major league teams care about steals,
yeah,
but Sure, fine. I'm in favor.
Yeah, same thing. I think latest inning to steal is probably not the way to do it, but it's probably the only feasible way to do it in any 2020 time. I think it would probably be like down by a run would be, or, you know, within a run might be the way I would want to do it. Yeah, with stolen bases pretty much almost phased out of the game, you know, it doesn't feel like a really fruitful area to pursue. But sure, I'm in favor, I guess.
Yeah. Not much downside, but maybe not a ton of upside either.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So proposals 9 through 11, all kind of taxi squad rules, maybe we'll kind of handle these somewhat together. Proposal 9, allow teams to steal yes, no for everyone on their taxi squad. Proposal 10, allow teams to set platoon splits for position players. And Proposal 11, allow teams to set bullpen usage indicators for all pitchers on their taxi squad. Essentially treat taxi squad members like auxiliary members of the lineup. Ben, how do you feel about this? Do you have any sense as to whether this would be feasible?
Honestly, the most difficult part of this might be updating the interface. I'm using scare quotes, interface on the website for the lineup card stuff. You know, it has to be just grabbing some kind of default from somewhere when people from the taxi squad end up entering the game for some reason.
Right.
I don't really see any downside to allowing this. I think it's the kind of thing where there might be some owners that have no interest in setting these, and so they should be able to leave them blank if they want to use whatever the default is. And then, you know, Scoresheet would just update the logic to say, like, if the user provided these values, then use them. Otherwise, we'll have these default values available. I'd say, like, fairly low effort to implement. Yeah. I would be curious to know how often players on the taxi squad actually participate in Scoresheet games.
It's an interesting question. Yeah, I don't have an immediate thought about that, but probably more than I think. Jared, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, what Ben said.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of agree. I support this in theory. I think it improves the control you have once a player gets into your game, and so I would kind of suggest that. I do think we're all dancing around the idea that we kind of want active roster limits, though, so we don't want this to happen. But but I appreciate, like, assuming that we do have this, that we have more control over it. Okay, proposals 12 and 13.
Did you want to come back to these at a later date, or do you want to keep going?
We can keep going. I think we're almost done.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll whip through this pretty quickly. So, essentially, these are about defense, and particularly defense for rookie and early to the major players. Essentially, the proposal 12 is a series of four proposals. I love the level of detail in this email. Please send emails for this level of detail to us in the future. We will get entire podcast episodes out of it. It's great. But proposal 12 is about rookie outfielders appearing as center fielders and getting varying ratings based upon their minor league center field, how often they appeared in center field in the minor leagues. So, Ben, do you think this is plausible?
I mean, this is all stuff that gets handled. Well, I guess it's not something that I was going to say handled preseason, but I guess it's like people that get called up and don't have ratings. Yeah. The toughest part about this might be getting the data about how often each person played center field in the minor leagues. Knowing only a little bit about that, it might be partially a licensing issue for them. Yep. Like, if they're not already getting minor league data, they would basically need to pull a list of all baseball players, which, you know, shudder, who would think to do that. And maybe just create a list at the beginning of the season that just says, like, this is what these people's ratings will be if they get promoted or happen to appear in a score sheet game.
And just set up a rule like this, you know, conditional structure that sets it so that you don't have to worry too much about, you know, how many errors they committed or whatever. Seems like it wouldn't be too tough to implement. I, again, would wonder how often it actually makes a difference. I think proposal 13 is a little bit more interesting than 12A through D. So.
Okay. Jared, how do you feel about this? So this is rookie outfielders as center fielders, depending on their getting higher ratings if they appear in center field more often.
I mean, just, I don't know, looking at this stuff just goes back to our defense discussion and makes me, I think it would make anyone just more frustrated about how defense works now, because this, I mean, this is just like so arbitrary, and I understand this is making it a little better, but I think to me it just reveals the arbitrariness, that everything else is trying to be relatively realistic, and then you get this, which is just like, yeah, whatever, we don't know, so we're just going to throw something out there.
I'm going to disagree with y'all. I love this. This one I want to right away.
It's not that I don't like the idea. Yeah. I just think it's making something that's kind of complicated sound more simple than it actually will be.
So, yes. So that's the caveat. But, you know, I do think Scoresheet was built in an era where even major leaguers just had outfield for their season position.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are certainly data sets out there now where, you know, I've seen how many games a player plays in the minor leagues at center field. I don't know if they have access to it, but this is something that has bothered me and genuinely, I think, harms taking defense first players, because they become really difficult to keep in their first year. You know that you are getting kind of one, maybe a full year of poor defense, and it also makes these like early season center fielders just so much more valuable than they are in real life. Like, you shouldn't have to lug Gerard Dyson's carcass around for 6 months just because every center fielder who's coming up to replace him has a 2.10 defensive range rating, and they're just not replaceable. Obviously, this is only a proxy, and like, there are certainly probably good defenders who are playing in the corners. There are probably bad defenders who are playing in center to get experience. It's certainly fraught. You know, this isn't an ideal solution, but I would strongly, strongly support this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor. I don't disagree with that. It's just frustrating.
Yeah, it brings up other issues for sure. And so proposal 13, treat sophomores as veterans for the purposes of assigning defensive numbers. When Harrison Bader plays top three defense as a rookie, give him a 2.20 since he's likely to start dropping within a year or two. When Miguel Andujar merits a 2.50 at third base, don't wait until he's arbitration eligible to ding him the full amount.
I'm really curious what you think about this idea. I cannot possibly guess.
Couldn't
what
predict.
You're to say.
Yeah, I don't see any downside for this. And
yeah,
it's super easy to implement.
So. Obviously, it's completely right. There's no challenge to implement it since it's all arbitrary anyway. Ben, are you in favor of this?
Yes.
Jared, are you in favor of this?
Yep.
I'm going to surprise you. I am in favor of this.
What? I was sitting down. I'm so glad.
Yeah, well, so there are a couple things. Like, you do have to regress the numbers. I don't think Miguel Andujar is quite as bad as his numbers showed last year, although I do love trolling Yankee fans, so, you know, why not? I would think about regressing the numbers a little bit, but like I said, we have the ratings, we know how players are doing, we know defense peaks early. This is, you know, if players aren't going to get their full range rating for 3 years, then it becomes really hard to keep Harrison Bader. Now, obviously, that's not like the end of the world. Like, Scoresheet is not based around your ability to keep Harrison Bader on the roster. But what if it was, though? But it's, you know, I think, again, it just gets you closer to realism, and it makes things more fun. Seems like a clear win on all sides.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's about all for this. There's another Scoresheet draft tool proposal. Love that idea, too. We'll get to that one day.
There's two of them.
Yeah.
We can talk about them later.
When we
can we just summarize, like, the score sheet draft tool is a little bit too rigid and stuck in time focused construct of like when picks happen, and you could just get away from that. It would make it better.
Yeah, and we'd love to do some lateral thinking about that in the future.
I have one other thing I want to mention about this. I didn't realize you weren't planning on going into this. So there was a time not so long ago when the scoresheet web draft tool didn't exist, and I had built and programmed a draft tool like in an off season to handle the draft for a bunch of our leagues, because having an online draft system seemed to make sense to us. And granted, like, I don't know, I don't remember how much time I spent on it, but, you know, things like what they're describing were either implemented in the first iteration of what I had or were within reach for like a second iteration. And it sort of boggles my mind that there isn't more power or flexibility in the web draft tool.
Well, you know what would help a web draft tool? Having consistent player ID numbers.
Nice segue. I love it.
So,
yes.
So if you've been following Scoresheet Talk, and if not, you know, it's a Yahoo group. I kind of stepped in it this week as well. And offered help to a user who was saying that it was really difficult for them to go from 2018 to 2019. They were a little frustrated by kind of the lack of the transition with IDs and the lack of connection to undrafted players in particular, that it was really hard for them to update their spreadsheets for the next year that they were using to track their draft. So what I did is build a crosswalk between 2018 IDs and 2019 IDs, more or less. And in that, I suggested that, you know, this could potentially be resolved by moving to a more permanent ID structure.
Should we vote on that? Ben, do you want to?
Yeah, but instead of doing a yay or nay vote, this is how many puppies are you willing to drown to make this happen?
No, so, but I think it's important, because I think this sounds like one of the things I came across really clearly is that this sounds like a really esoteric thing to plant a flag on to a lot of people. It sounds like we're just making things more complex. So, Ben, I'm going to like deliver this one to you. Why is having a permanent ID more important as a developer?
This is like saying, like, why is having a computer that turns on important as a developer to me? So it's like a little bit hard to describe for people that don't get it. I mean, like, even in like inherent in the definition of like an identification number is that it does not change. Like, that is the number that identifies that entity, person, row, whatever it is. So, you know, we call these ID numbers, but they're not ID numbers really. I mean, I guess they're like, annual identification anyway. I have to imagine that they invest a lot of time every year in coming up with the player list and going through the IDs, and, not just in the spring when they're like first developing the list, but then, you know, when inevitably they have to add players, because even in creating the list, they don't include everybody that's owned on a scoresheet team. They only include players that like they think should be owned on a scoresheet team. And so every year we're in a league where somebody wants to keep some minor leaguer that, you know, the Bartons didn't put on the player list. And it's just like, what? He was on last year's player list because we owned him last year. Just carry him forward. Everything about this whole process would be better and easier if they just had a consistent ID number. The thing about this to me actually is not the thing that makes this conversation interesting is not that there are arguments that are supportive of having a single ID for each player that is consistent year over year. The thing that makes this fascinating to me is that there are people that legitimately argue that having a consistent ID number is a bad thing. Like, like not just that it's not worth the work or whatever, but the, like, it's worse to have say like a 6-digit number instead of a 4-digit number because people have to write it down, or that having value in like the ordinal ranking of the ID numbers and like the meaning that it implies is going to outweigh the value of having a consistent number from year to year. It just boggles my mind.
Can I butt in for a second?
Yeah,
because I do want to let you continue your rant, but I want to rant for a second. I don't remember 4-digit ID numbers either.
Yeah,
I'm copying and pasting. Like that is the thing that is fascinating to me. Like, is everyone else in the league like a computer wore tennis shoes? I'm copying and pasting. I do not care if it is 4 digits, 6 digits, if it is emoji. Like, I just press copy and paste because I would make too many mistakes otherwise. Carry on.
No, I mean. What? So this is a legitimately honest question. In what settings would somebody be playing score sheet and have to like write out a number?
It's a good question. Like, I guess occasionally you would type it in if you're like drafting Justin Verlander. You would probably just type 1 in like the trade box or something.
But you could just click on his name in the thing or like find it. Okay. I mean, like, are there people that are submitting like lineup cards by hand and they're like writing in the player ID numbers in the lineup card? Like, doesn't everybody use a computer to do this and like follow on the computer? Or is there like actually a cohort of owners that are doing this like with pen and paper?
I thought there were still some
pen and paper
people. Okay.
So, you know, I think like I don't want to dismiss this as actual customer feedback, right? So like, you know, I don't want to sound dismissive. You know, change is difficult, even if it's that. And I, you know, literally the day I was typing that, I was like sitting in a 2.5-hour conversation about database structure. So, you know, certainly I know, like, I wasn't asking for like, hey, can you just flip Y to N? Like, it certainly involves like almost a gut renovation of.
Hang on. Are you sure that it would? Because like. They've already got a spot in their thing for a number.
Yeah, I'm just assuming a lot of the
number in there.
I'm just assuming there are a lot of like relational database issues with it. So like, I don't want to presume that it's a nothing conversation.
But they're already putting that ID number in a bunch of places. Like, okay, let's have a hypothetical situation. What if the order of playing time next year was exactly the same as the order of playing time this year? And all the ID numbers happened to be the same. Do you really think that would be more work for them? It'd have to be less work or the same, right?
Yeah, I just think with like AL, NL leagues having different numbers, I think there's something going on that's surprising. So there are a couple things here. And I kind of want to make these points because I think I was not making them well in the email that I sent. I may try to send another email tonight to kind of clarify. Number one. Like, I understand it's more challenging. It's like, you know, I liked having a 7-digit phone number. Now I have a 10-digit phone number because now I have to add my area code everywhere. It's harder. Fine. I don't remember it as well. But I also don't know anyone's phone number anymore because I just use their name. I don't know my sister's phone number. I've lived with, you know, she's been my sister for 30 years. you know, I think it is... the thing I didn't get across is that, you know, I think along with ID numbers changing and becoming more permanent is that we would hopefully find a way to like bury them so that you're not using them for anything in an interface and it would just be a little easier to use.
Yeah. Players shouldn't have to know or score sheet owners shouldn't have to know the player ID numbers.
Right. They should just know the player. Number two, like, I guess it's also not clear, like, why we're asking for it. Like, granted, like, everyone says, you know, they agree, like, this is better in an ideal world, but what's important about it? And, you know, I think I would want to help clarify the stakes. Because, you know, I think we want to see this game ideally grow and, you know, adapt to a changing world. And, you know, I think we, the three of us, have a track record of building things that help the game. You know, whether it is your applications, whether it's working on SSSim, if it's these podcasts, if it's articles, you know, I think we have put our money where our mouth is. We would like to build more things. And because this is not, because Scoresheet is not built on a stable ground, data-wise, it is exceedingly hard for us to do that.
Yeah. I mean, we have an auction league that's on the brink of folding almost specifically because it's too onerous to manage the league and keep track of all of the contracts year over year and run all of the like details of the auction, because all that has to change and be updated every single year. And like, we could theoretically build an entire infrastructure for any league to be run as an auction league if that wasn't going to be a problem.
Yeah. We could build the draft tool. We could build the ADP tracker. We could build, you know, the draft possession. Yeah, that percent owned.
Yeah.
You know, there's like, there are a lot of things that we'd want to do. And I can't imagine we are the only people who want to do things. So, you know, I think there are actual things being lost. And because they don't exist yet, nobody misses them. But I think they would. And that's why I do want to forcefully advocate for this, even though it doesn't seem popular, even though you have to change from 4 digits to 6 digits, even though the player who pitches the most innings isn't given the ID number one, which I do like too. I do like that, the player.
But they're not even that good. Like, what? It just means they didn't get hurt. I don't get why.
It makes me feel good too. So I get it. Like, I get that there's something missing. But, you know, I think we would also, I don't like the idea of just asking for something without giving something back in return. And I think if something like this were implemented, we would be able to give something back in return. And that's why we mention it, even though, you know, I think it might seem esoteric to most.
I guess so. I think your explanation of like all the things that we've done to help, I mean, let's be frank, we've put in basically volunteer time that, if anything, made the Bartons money. Certainly didn't make us any money. And
no, I just bought a new mic.
It might have. Right. We're in the negative for sure. You know, we're paying for a website domain to be hosted to be able to put together some of the stuff that we do, or other hobbyist things that are almost exclusively focused on running Scoresheet teams. And I'm not saying that that is why they should listen, but it should definitely occur to everyone that when we say that we care about this and we try to explain that we think it's important and reasonable, that we're coming from best intentions for the, like, for the game itself, right? For the company of Scoresheet or whatever that is, you know? Like, it's not like, yeah, this is like Ben and Jared and Ian's side project that they'd really like to be able to get off the ground so they can finally make some money off of that stupid Scoresheet habit. It's like, we just want to have more fun playing this game, and we want other people to have more fun playing this game.
Yeah, and it's not even that we want an advantage in our leagues. Like, right. We're not good enough even with draft. we just want to build stuff that is, yeah, that's cool. We want to be able to share it, and we want other people to be able to do that too.
Yeah.
And I think moving towards a more modern system and a more modern data structure is one way of getting there. So, with that in mind, and because we're running a little over our scheduled time, anyone have a best thing that they saw this week? I don't want to spring it on anyone. I got one little thing, but we're getting back in the hang of things.
I had one thing in case you asked. I'll try to do it real quick. I watched Rent on Fox this week.
Sure. I'm
guessing this is not your best thing that you saw this week.
No day but yesterday.
So the thing is, Rent was aired on Fox, and they're airing it live. Networks are showing live musicals. This is what they're doing now. Yeah. But the thing that happened this time was that someone got hurt in dress rehearsal.
Yeah.
So they aired the dress rehearsal, except for the very last segment of the show. Okay. But someone broke their leg during the dress rehearsal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's kind of crazy. And so whatever, Rent, not maybe my favorite musical, whatever. I don't think it's that good, and I didn't have any particular interest. But so I knew this backstory. I didn't watch it live. I watched it, I guess, on demand yesterday or something. I knew somebody broke their leg during the dress rehearsal, and I knew that they were airing the dress rehearsal, but I didn't know which actor did this, other than mm-hmm. it was a male actor. So it's sort of like Hitchcock's Bomb Under the Table. It was super exciting watching this thing because I knew that at some point some dude was gonna literally break his leg during this. And this is a show with, it's got a lot of jumping. There was like a swing set at one point. Like they started crowd surfing. It was like, it was almost thrilling because I knew that at some point some dude's gonna break his leg, but I don't know which one. So it was a fascinating way to watch a musical.
That's incredible.
You and, found a way to make Rent exciting.
When they were like, break a leg out there.
Yeah, somebody got fired for saying that.
And I mean, I know, but who was it in the end?
I don't know any of the characters.
It's Roger. The main character. The main character.
He's got a guitar. There's not really the main. He's got a guitar.
Okay, it's probably Mark. I was a Hedwig fan. There were a bunch of like Rent jokes, even in 1998. You know, I was okay. I was a strange child. Anyway, that sounds amazing. I definitely recommend watching, not Rent live, but the like Instagram videos of the actual performance that they held with Roger in a wheelchair doing choreography, which they should have shown. It was the better show.
That sounds like it'd be pretty good, actually.
It was more interesting. You know, there's no reason why Roger shouldn't be in a wheel, can't be in a wheelchair. It's, you know, fine. It's 2019. Yeah, and it would have been more fun. Although I think the way you describe it, you had the most fun of all. And you know, I had a busy week. I saw a Network on Broadway, which is fascinating. I saw Beale Street Could Talk, which is a pretty great movie. So I had a lot of contenders for best thing I saw this week. But the best thing I saw this week is not any of that. It's San Diego Padres
changing
in 2020 have finally decided to move back to the brown and yellow uniform.
Oh, I should have known. Yeah.
This is Scorsese 2020 for me. This is the game changer that I've been waiting for. The San Diego Padres, who you have not thought of in a decade, even if you live in San Diego. I just want to be clear. Nobody has concerned themselves with the Padres in like 10 years. You know why? Their uniforms are put you to sleep immediately. This was a disaster. I don't know why people have decided to move to uniforms that are so safe that they mean nothing. The Brewers uniform means nothing. The Seattle Mariners uniform is pretty bad. The Washington Nationals uniform is horrifying. And the San Diego Padres uniform is so boring as to put me to sleep. Where is the Kelly green? Where's the teal? Where's the bright magenta? I want futuristic uniforms. When they put on the futuristic uniforms, it's great. When they go with like corporate blue, it's boring. Tampa Bay Rays need to go back to green. They could go back to rainbow. I don't care. But the San Diego Padres are going to be a cool brown and mustard, and that is the best thing I saw this week.
You should let me go before you did that. So technically last week, not this week, the baby started walking like well enough that we can say like, oh, this human being can walk on her own now. She had been like cruising a little bit, which is like holding on to stuff while she walks. But now she can like prop herself up in the middle of the room and like walk across the room without falling on her butt. So that's like simultaneously exciting, but also terrifying. yeah.
But all right.
It's fun watching them learn. It's cool.
Yeah, that's amazing. Once they start, I hear they don't stop.
For it's true. A while. Yeah,
until they star in Rent.
Yeah. Just, gosh,
straight walking.
So one of the things I didn't expect this to be true. The thing that's been the worst about this is not that you have to like, because of course you have to like watch more carefully now because she can like get new places more quickly. That part of it's fine. The part of it that is a little bit onerous or like frustrating is that it also means that she has no interest in sitting still anywhere ever. Unless she's like literally asleep. So basically every second of her life she wants to spend exploring, and that's like very tiring. and you like want to get her to sit down to eat, or I don't know, take off a diaper that's got poop all over it. Like, she has no patience or tolerance for any of that stuff. So she'll like try to climb off of the changing table and like run around the room. And you're like, child, there's like literally shit on the walls now because you're like flailing your fucking legs all over the place.
Well, that sounds better than a paternity test to me.
Yeah. So good times, good times.
All right. So, okay. So we've all done pretty great things. We leave you there. Hopefully, next week we have, hopefully special guests. It'll be a little less controversial, maybe. And the week after,
differently again, controversial, we'll, differently.
We do want to take your questions. Where can we do that?
Scoresheet at baseballperspectus.com.
Send them.
Hang on. I wish everybody could see Jared lean into his microphone when he says this. He gets this like very straight faced look on it and just like gets really close to him.
Scoresheet at baseballperspectus.com.
See, if you went to radio school, you would know how to do that.
Yeah, right. Oh, man.
All right. Thank you all for another great week. Hope to catch you again soon. On behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, I'm Ian Lefkowitz. Thanks again, and have a great day.